I have a girl right now who, her name's Danielle, and her and this other woman got out of sex trafficking and they are prosecuting their pimp.
Welcome to another episode of Dear Jane. I am Marcy. I'm joined by Scott Baker. How's it going, Scott?
Going great. Glad to be here.
We are having a conversation today with, I can't have favorites. I should not have favorites because we have a lot of really wonderful guests on the show and I truly enjoy every conversation. But our guest today does have a special place in my heart. I've gotten to travel with her, to do film shoots. We've gotten to spend time with her on work trips where we get to sync up and she just has the most incredible story of such a dark and oppressive life and then getting to leave that life, not without challenge, but come out victorious and an overcomer on the other side. I just am continually inspired by her story, no matter how many times I hear it.
Yep. Jean Marie Davis is going to join us. She's been on the show before, but you can't, every single time I hear her talk, number one, I learned something new. I am motivated and inspired and appalled and a whole host of emotions every single time I hear her talk. Now, on a personal level, I just love hanging out with her and chatting. But every time she tells her story, you experience this range of emotions. And you know what, Marcy? Actually, it would make a really good movie.
It's funny you should say that because she's going to tell us about a feature-length film that is being created about her story. So continue listening, join our conversation with Jean Davis, learn about her upcoming film Breaking Shadows, and I think you will be as encouraged by her story and inspired as we have been. Jean, thanks so much for joining us today. We're excited to chat with you.
Yes, so exciting.
Yes, there's a lot going on. You are involved in a lot of things right now, and we'll get to what some of those are because it's very exciting. But before we kick things off and talk about a feature film and other things, could you, for people who may not know your story, could you give us a refresher just on your story, who you are, and that'll kind of set the stage for where we go from there?
Yeah, so thank you for having me on your show. I really appreciate it. But I am what you would call an overcomer, not a survivor of sex trafficking. And that's really huge. And there's a lot of differences between that. But my story is very different than most people. I was trafficked collectively over 20 years. And so from 2 to 29, I was groomed, and how can I say it? I was groomed, set up, and trained to basically be in the sex trafficking world in the United States. And so at the age of 18, I walked into it because it was a normal life that I had already seen, lived. And so from 18 to 29, I learned how to navigate through what the sex trafficking world looked like, whether I was the pimp or the madam, the bottom or the recruiter, whether I was the reinforcer, where I would put women in their places, or I was one that kept the money, whatever it looked like. I kind of just navigated through that world. I would say from 2003 to 2014 was my real hardcore run through United States, whether it was down south, Midwest, East Coast, or the West Coast. Wherever my head laid is where I became that type of person. So when trafficking, I think it was 2017 is when I had a class or I was involved in a program that they introduced this, hey, you were trafficked and trafficking is not normal. And I was like, wait a minute, What? And so when I went through that program and realized that that's not true, that's when I said, oh, well, there's a lot more women that are out there. And then in the midst of that, I had a child, but I wanted to abort my child before getting into who Jesus Christ was and what my new life looked like, because I was on the run. It was at the very end of my life, or my run with human trafficking. I got involved with too many gangs, too many head honchos, you would say, that basically put my life at danger, and I knew too much. And so I became a liability instead of an asset to them. And so I ran for my life because they wanted to kill me and my unborn. And so that made me want to have an abortion. And when I went to a pregnancy center, Phyllis, who was the person there, she shared Jesus with me. She says, I can't help you, but I know a man named Jesus. So I said, okay. And it was interesting because of how she approached it, because I never liked a man, never wanted to deal with a man because of all the rapes that I had been through, and seeing the brutalization that they had put other women through. I just didn't want to deal with it. But she, when she said that, and the way she said it, I said, huh, I want to try this man. Okay. And that was going to be 11 years ago, but, you know, I ran with him, and through that, I became an overcomer, because at first I was a survivor. Because that was the mentality. Okay, I just got to make it through. I just got to make it through a day. And then once I realized who Jesus Christ is, and I knew that I was bought by the blood of the Lamb, like, I was like, okay, I'm an overcomer. So that's kind of a synopsis of who I am.
Well, and it's not a synopsis of who you are. You're so much more than that. I mean, I've been blessed. We know Jean pretty well. We're great friends with her. That's part of your story for sure. One of the ways that you have changed my perspective is I used to think, you know, when I would hear a story similar to this, I'd think, okay, in the United States, yeah, maybe over there, maybe in that inner city or that particular bad city over there, I guess I could buy that. And you taught me, it can be anywhere, can it?
Yes. I work actually in Vermont, and I had to actually write a letter to the senators a couple weeks ago because they wanted to pass the S-54 bill, which legalized prostitution throughout the whole state of Vermont. And people don't even know where Vermont is. Like, a lot of people, like, they're like, I didn't even know where Vermont was. But it's a small little state next to New York, and it has less than 1 million people that live in this state, but they want to legalize it because they say it's going to empower women and give them benefits. And so I had to write a letter, not defending the bill and not coming against the bill. I kind of wrote the letter as, hey, here's my testimony. This is what can occur once this bill comes in. If you decide to move it forwards, the senators let me know that they were not taking any testimonies when this bill moves forward on either side. So it's whatever they decide, whoever signs it, and it's going to go through. Once it goes through the Senate, and it hits the House, it automatically gets approved. So that's where I tell people it's not the big name like L.A., it's not San Diego or New York or Atlanta. That's where the money's at. But to recruit women, it's the small places. So you have to go get your business first, or your product, or your items, right? Depending on where you're at, for them to come over to become, you know, merchandise for them to sell for whoever.
Can you talk to us? Because I think sometimes, you know, Scott was talking about things that he didn't really understand before talking with you. One of the things I think a lot of people don't understand the link between is sex trafficking and abortion. Can you talk about how those two are linked together, how the two industries kind of feed off of each other?
Yep. So when you have a woman who is abortion-minded, meaning she wants to have an abortion, she, because of it's in an inconvenience in her life, then you have those ones that go and they'll do it, and they say, it's my body, my choice. when you have a woman who wants to have a child because their boyfriend, quote unquote, their pimp or their sex trafficker has given them this lavish dream that they're going to live for together and they're going to be together, they have a desire to have a child. And then when they get pregnant, or if they get pregnant, then they're forced to have an abortion. There's no coercion. There's no, it's a literal, you must have an abortion because you lose the amount of money that you can get. Now, are there people, men and women, that are out there that have a fetish for women who are pregnant? Yes. So there's that link in that industry. But majority of the time, there's an abortion that usually happens, and it's usually forced. Like my situation, it was being a forced situation because I was scared for my life and I was scared for my unborn's life. And there's, I think statistics has said like 55% of women. So that's over half. So if you had 10 women, that's basically 6 women who are being forced to have an abortion that do not get to choose, don't get to voice their opinion because they have no voice when they're dealing with their pimps.
So tell us more about how you broke free of that whole lifestyle. You talked about it. You found a pregnancy center. And of course, faith played a big part, but it couldn't have been as simple as just, oh, I'm done. I'm walking away today. Sort of walk us through that.
So for me, it took a program. So I went through a program called New Life Home for Women and Children by Grace Rosado. Love her dearly. And it was a 2-year program, and they literally had to rewire my brain. I literally went to a PTSD set, and then I went into where I didn't even know how to wear makeup or wear clothes. Like, it was like my mind just shut down. I forgot how to read, forgot how to write. And through those 2 years, I had to be retrained on many aspects of it, even to know what my worth was and what's my identity, what that looked like, and who was I? Because I had been, I think it was, I counted one time, I think I had almost 26 pimps in a matter of 10 years, which is not common. And so to have to constantly change and fit the mold of every man and whatever they wanted, it was intense. So I lost who I was, and I didn't know who Jean Davis was. So it took the time, and then from there, I dialed in and said, okay, Jesus, use me, however that is, right? That Isaiah 6, you know, here I am, send me. And then he brought me back to Phyllis Phelps, and then I started working with her at House of Hope, and we started rescuing women and started going on the streets. We just did a rescue a couple of months ago where she was, you know, in a house and her pimp was screaming, I'm gonna burn down the house, had her 4-year-old daughter in there, and we had to go rescue her and stuff. And we got there, and I think it was about, had we had not left about 2 or 3 minutes late, we would have ran up on the pimp and he would have came. He was right around the corner. So we were in a rush to get her out and her child. So those kind of things that we did, and I realized, like, wow, I can be used. And I think people don't realize that they can actually be used.
Mm-hmm. And it's so important to tell your story. But let me ask you, I could answer this question myself. I'd have my own answer. Why? But let me ask you, why is it important to tell your story?
By the blood of the Lamb and the word of your testimony. It is very key to share your testimony, because there's some woman, somebody, whether it's a man or a woman, who's gone through that same similar. I was just at a hospital last week, and a guy who is gay, he broke down and cried because I was talking about how I was raped and the things that I went through, and he's been there. And, you know, he came and talked to me afterwards and stuff. And no, we don't have the same beliefs, but he understood that I knew where he was coming from. And I think a lot of women who don't speak about, who have come out of sex trafficking, they don't give justice for women who are still in there, who need to hear, hey, I've been there. I know what you've gone through. I know what you are going through. And you can speak up. You do not be afraid to use your voice, because they stifle who they are. So they feel like they have no voice. And then you get these women that start screaming at the top of the lungs, this is my body, my choice. Well, why are you saying that? It's because you've been abused, neglected. You've been broken down to where you feel like you have no voice and nobody's going to hear you. So if you come out with these wide and statements that are going to pay attention to people and hey, that yeah, my body is my choice. It is my choice. No, it's really not. But okay, but because you're saying that, and a lot of women are screaming that, it's because usually they've been raped, they've been molested, they've been abused physically, emotionally, mentally. There's something that they've gone through, and they feel like they haven't had they've been injustice somewhere.
Stories are so powerful, and you are getting ready to tell yours in a big way. Tell us about Breaking Shadows.
Oh, Breaking Shadows. It is a very intense movie. They had the movie Sound of Freedom, and that was a high level government. This is what happens on the government level. But I've had conversations with many nonprofit organizations that are human trafficking organizations, and they're like, Gene, how do we relate to our donors? How do we relate to the people? Because they don't think that it's real. They don't see it. And so I was hearing the cries of people and organizations, and that's when I said, okay, we need to bring the focus and the lens onto the streets. And exposing what happens on the streets, on the street level, to make it an everyday. I remember when I was in, I think it was either the Bay Area or Southern California, and I was wearing a Starbucks outfit, and I got pulled over from a buyer and was looking to purchase me, and I was just wearing regular clothes. Like, these are the things that we don't see and stuff, because we think it's kidnapped, or there's this high level viewpoint, and now we are wanting to narrow it down. So this movie is to expose the black on black crime. This movie is to expose the realities of what the streets look like. You know, I was just in California a couple weeks ago, and they're still walking on Figueroa. They're still walking. And when we were in Florida, they aren't walking anymore. So there's two different things that I'm like, okay, so Florida's not doing what they used to do when I used to do, be out there on the streets, but California, they're still doing the same thing. So that's where this movie shows. And when I say black on black crime, is because in my story, all my pimps were black. And there's that whole thing like, Black Lives Matter and all this stuff, and okay, and we care about the black people. Well, does black people really care about black people? And so it's, you know, because if black people really cared about black people, then 82% of abortions wouldn't happen in the black community.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. That, no question, the black community is inordinately affected by abortion. No question about that. So tell us, what is the Breaking Shadows dream? What's your dream for this? Hey, just a quick break to tell people to do all the stuff. Subscribe, and what other things follow. Can they do if they're truly pro-life?
Oh, wow. This is reminiscent of the 90s. Forward this
what
email.
Other can, things can they do to pass the pro-life test to the benefit Dear Jane?
Well, if you never want to miss an episode, you should subscribe on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. You should follow us on social media. We're on X, Instagram, Facebook. Anywhere where you're hanging out online, we're likely hanging out there too. We post information about our guests, inspiring quotes, clips from the show so you can get a preview. Follow us in all of those places. And for extra bonus points, there are no points, but extra bonus points, if you would go leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and leave a written review, that would help other people find us.
And comments. Leave comments, mm-hmm. like the videos and stuff. If you want to talk about how awesome we are, good looking, things like that. We really would encourage that. But really, you know, all the comments that can help raise the notoriety as well. So thank you very much for doing that. YouTube and all the podcast platforms. What is the Breaking Shadows dream? What's your dream for this?
To win a billion souls. That is my dream. To win a billion souls, but also to hopefully and prayerfully give women a safe place to say, listen, here's my story. I have a girl right now who, her name is Danielle. I've been working with her for a year now. She reached out to me from Washington State, and her and this other woman got out of sex trafficking, and they are prosecuting their pimp. It's been 3 years going. They haven't even gone into court yet. They keep on pushing the court date out. They were supposed to have it in January. Then they came back and she was talking to me. She's like, Jean, it's now supposed to be in March. It was supposed to be in May. Now they're saying it's in July. Now they're saying it's in, I think she said September 29th, I think is when their next court date or next hearing is. Supposedly, and this is just the first hearing of their case. So they haven't even been heard. And that right there is frustrating because women who feel like they should have a voice and you go, okay, we're going to prosecute these people, but then it never happens. And so then you get women that says, what's the point then? And they give up in the fight and they go back into this cycle of this reality of like, you know what? Nobody cares about me. The pimp told me the truth. They don't care about me. So the pimp's the only one that cares about me. And then, you know, she thankfully has Jesus, but what usually happens is if that's the case, she'll go back to the pimp and then the pimp will beat her up because you just had me arrested and whatever. So she'll get abused physically. And then he'll say, okay, go make money and do what you have to do. And here's your quota. And then, you know, that will suffice me and, you know, I'll forgive you. And then, you know, they have repercussions, you know, they might can't sleep in a room or whatever. Like for me, I wasn't able to use the bathroom or the shower or anything until a certain time frame. So I had to wait 12 hours so I could use the bathroom. There's all kinds of stuff that come behind the, you know, coming back to your pimp and stuff. So, that's my hope is that this movie will bring out more women to share their stories, say, yeah, I've been there, whether they're in it right now or they're survivors, and then also to win a billion souls.
So we're talking about a full, what do they call them, Marcy, a full feature-length film.
Feature-length film.
Yeah, so, I mean, we're talking like big production with you know, all kinds of cool effects, exploding car. No, not of that, but like a full-blown real movie, right? That's what we're talking about.
Yes, we have right now Joy Villa, who's actually going to be playing me. So we've been working on that, and we're right now in discussions with different directors to direct the movie. And so it's exciting. It's a long process. Movies don't just happen like that. You know, I want everything to like, come on, let's go. Like everybody needs to see this because there's so many hurting people. But God's timing's perfect.
One of the things that excites me when I think about the film is just the bringing out into light what is so hidden for a lot of people, but hidden in plain sight. I remember I had a lot of revelations when you and I were on a film shoot together for a different project in Florida. And over the course of a few hours, we went and grabbed lunch, and then we ended up at a shopping mall and just like shooting different things. And it was like constant, like pointing out, do you see these people over here doing this? This is likely what's happening. Or at one point at the restaurant, you even approached and talked to someone. And we're just, once you started pointing things out, it was shocking to me how many of those same things I've probably seen dozens or hundreds of times. And just didn't realize what I was seeing. And I think to me, that's what it's going to take to awaken America to this issue and how prevalent it is.
Well, it's crazy because all those scenarios that you were talking about, none of them were children.
Right. Yeah. That's the other thing. People think it's children. Right. And none of them were. Yeah.
And that's where people need to understand between the ages of 18 and 25, they're forgotten. Mm-hmm. And that's the most vulnerable ages, right? Because kids, whether it's boys or girls, they come out of the system, which is basically foster care, because people get forgotten. And so when they get out of the foster care, they have they don't want to be known by anybody. Don't nobody want them. They already have this abandoned feeling. So somebody comes along. So now you have these men that say, "Oh, I love you. Only I love you." Mm-hmm. So that's who we focus on. But then you have the normal looking, you know, people that come in. I still think about how my son and I were flying from Charlotte, North Carolina to Houston. And there was a guy with two girls, a pimp, and he looked at my son and watched my son go to the bathroom. And then he looked at me to size me up, thinking that I would be willing to come onto his team.
Wow.
You know, and so there's like, and it's hard to say no. That's what people don't get. It's hard to say no. It's hard to do the job that I'm doing. Like, I'm an executive director at a pregnancy center. Would I make in a year? I can make in 3 weeks.
I was going to ask you, why is it hard? It's because it's money? That's why it's hard to say no?
Yeah. You know, because I had somebody ask me one day, what did you used to make? And I had to really sit there and think, like, because in over, I think, one pimp in 5 years, I was with one pimp for 5 years, but I had other pimps in that time, but I used to send him money. I was secretly sending money. And I sent him over $5 million in 5 years and bought him a condo in Vegas. I always have to say this because it was a really nice condo. Wow. But I sat there and I had to calculate. So the most I made in one day was $9,000. But on an average, I made $2,000 a day. And if I worked 7 days a week, that's 56,000. I mean, let's just calculate, like, if you really think about that, right? So 2,000, that's 14,000 a week. Mm-hmm. Like, that's already somebody's half of their salary. Somebody's, you know, that's somebody's part-time salary right there. Like, some of these girls that I talk with and I work with, you know, there's one girl, she's at a strip club in New Hampshire, and she was, you know, she makes on an average monthly almost $30,000.
Wow.
Right. But, and I told her, I go, listen, this is what's going to probably happen. You're going to probably get aggressive. People are going to get aggressive, this and stuff. And sure enough, she comes back to me and she's like, oh, the mafia just took over and they're expecting me to do certain things, you know? And so that's where people think like, oh yeah, it'll benefit a woman and all this. And the money, when you get that amount of money, and then, you know, going and working and making $14,000 a week. Now, mind you, I never had it. I always had to give it to my pimp. And then he would ask me, like, how much money do you need? And I would have to calculate exact. And he would go, what for? And I had to tell him the exact amount. And then he would give it to me. And then he would make sure people were watching me to make sure I spent my money on that. So I've had pimps who wouldn't let me do drugs. I had pimps that did let me do drugs. So all depending on who it was. And so other than that, they kept the money. And majority of the time, I'm supporting and fueling their marriage, because a lot of my pimps were married and had children. So I didn't sleep with majority of my pimps, and so I would just stay in a hotel and just make all this money, and they would come get in, and basically I just paid whatever bills that, you know, their families had. And so that's what it looks like, and it's sad.
So you're unafraid. I mean, I've seen you tell your story in all kinds of different scenarios with all kinds of different people. You call yourself an overcomer. I would add force of nature to the list. You ever run into anybody that's like, you're exaggerating, Gene. You ever run into any kind of resistance? Because I know you've talked to people who don't think the same way you do. You ever run into that kind of thing?
Oh, yes. I run with people who have come out of it in New England, who are survivors of, and, oh, Gene, you don't do that. And so, and then they'll see it. I actually brought a pimp and a prostitute to my church. And they were like, and my pastor was even shocked. He was like, you brought a pimp and his prostitute? I said, sure did. Here you go. here you go. Like, you know, and that's when people were like, because I used to tell people, like, I could take one man. Because of the life that I lived, I learned how to fight one man and get away. I cannot take two. And so when that there's a man that comes in, they're like, you know, I had to go get another girl down in Boston, in Dorchester, Massachusetts. And I remember I brought a guy with me who's not a Christian, tatted up, white man, you know, and we sit in the car and he's like, yo, we're going to go get this girl. And I was like, hey, I'm about to go snatch. And he's looking and he's like, I ain't got my gun. I was like, you don't need a gun. Don't worry. He's like, what? And I just walk up and they're like, he goes, how you doing? So sometimes when people say, oh, you don't do it. Oh, we don't believe it. I say, come with me. I said, take a ride with me. And then we usually, and Marcy has seen it. We take a ride and it's just, like she said, I just walk up. There's certain though, we had, there was a group of women that I would not approach because I knew it would not fare well with the situation if I did approach. But, and that's where you have to find your discernment and wisdom. Like, okay, is this something that's going to be safe or not safe and stuff? So I don't just carelessly go out.
Have you ever thought about, so you talked about what, it's been 11, 12 years. Mm-hmm. Thought about where you've been. I mean, I'm just sitting here, Gene, thinking about what you described in the streets and the alleys and everything. Now you're testifying before legislative bodies. You're talking to big crowds. I mean, that is remarkable.
Right, because I don't like the government. I was raped by a bunch of police officers. Oh, right? So how do you trust the legislation, and how do you trust the government when there are crooked cops, you know? But yes, I'm shocked. Needless to say, I'm shocked by what the Lord has allowed me to do. I think it's a person becomes dangerous when they have nothing to lose.
Yeah. Hmm. Interesting. One of the things, oh, go ahead.
Right. Because when I have nothing, I have nothing to lose and I have nothing to gain. Right. I don't know how many times I didn't look at bullets. I didn't dodge. I'm not supposed to be alive past the age of, I think it was like the last time I got shot at was like when I was 24, 25. So I'm supposed to be dead. So at the end of the day, I have nothing to lose. Mm-hmm. That becomes very dangerous. Yeah. Because what can you do now? And then on top of that, I have Jesus. So if you definitely take me out, I'm headed home anyways. Yeah. So when you have nothing to lose, you become dangerous.
I love Gene. Gene's the best.
I just love your perspective. And one of the things that strikes me every time I hear your story and every time I talk with you is the lack of bitterness in your voice and in your demeanor. And it strikes me because I feel like you or other people who have stories similar to you would have all of the reason and justification in the world for bitterness and for hating the people that wronged you. How do you not have that?
It's the level of faith and belief that you have in Jesus. Right. Because I'm actually going to a conference. I'm speaking at a women's conference in a couple of weeks. And it was pressed on my heart to talk about healing. Right. So for me, I am not on any prescriptions. You know, I have PTSD when I first came out of it, but I'm not prescribed. I don't take any medication or anything like that. Why? Because I believe the word of God. And I believe that God has healed me. Now, I'm not like this superficial person and all spiritual, like, oh, no. Like, if there are things medically that you need to, like, do that. And there's someone, like I said, the girl Danielle that I'm working with, she's prosecuting her pimp. I'm for that. I will support that. In my story, I'm not. Mm-hmm. And the reason why, and people don't understand, because I've been offered many times to go testify in front of the Capitol Hill. And all in front of all the government and stuff like that. And every time they've asked me to come testify, they always say, can you try your traffickers? Can you persecute, you know, can you put them in jail? And I go, no. And they go, well, then we don't want you to testify. And I go, well, then I won't. And the reason why I won't do that is because I used to do the same thing. I recruited girls. Mm-hmm. I put a lot of girls on drugs. I sent a lot of girls to Planned Parenthood. I put a lot of girls in some dangerous, compromising situations. One girl got, she had sex with a man, and he tore her whole insides. And she was screaming, crying, and I could not do anything, but I'm the one that put her in that position and stuff. And after that, that girl could never have sex again. That's how hurtful that he did to her body. But that's what I did. And so there's a lot of things that I know that I, like I said, I had to navigate through that life. And there was things, and it was be killed or get killed. Either you come up or you don't. And so that was the lifestyle that I lived. And I had to go back, and the Lord said to me, if you don't forgive them, how do you expect me to forgive you? And so that's where that healing came from, is I had to recognize and come to terms of what I did to people. Because we are all sinners. You know, nobody is better than the next person. And so I can't walk around high and mighty like, oh, I got it all together. Like I tell everybody, I sin every day. You know, I sin every day. So who am I to look at you and call you out on your sin? So then we're going to do this, you know, what's the plank that's sticking out of my eye, but I'm gonna worry about the speck that's in yours. Like, yeah, no, like if I'm gonna judge you, I'm gonna judge you by your fruit based on the fruit that I have produced. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna match fruits, mm-hmm. you know, and then I go from there. Other than that, if I don't believe in the healing that Jesus Christ did on the cross for us, then I'd be under some pills right now. I can tell you that much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Grateful for that healing, grateful for you sharing your story, and I'm excited for Breaking Shadows and the progress there. If people want to follow you, get updates on Breaking Shadows, they can go to your website, jeandavis.org. And then we also have their social media set up for Breaking Shadows. People can follow that way. BreakingTheShadows.com was where people can go to find out more about the film and get updates there, and even support if they would like to do that. But Jean, we're just so grateful to know you. Thanks for coming on the show to share your story and talk about the film, and looking forward to partnering with you in these endeavors.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you, Scott. Love y'all.